Hi, all, and welcome to the Find Calm Here podcast. I am your host, Deb Schell. On this podcast, I share conversations I have with community builders who offer tips on what's worked for them and resources that have helped them find calm in the community building process. If you're a new community builder or just considering a community to bring your clients, customers, or audience together, but you don't know how or where to start, I'm happy to jump on a call with you and offer a discovery call. There'll be a link in the show notes for you to chat with me for free for a conversation. You can also sign up for our Calm Community newsletter to learn more about resources and tools that will help you build a paid online community and support you at any stage of your community building process. I also lead the Find Calm Here community. Inside the community, you will receive tools and resources to support you in any stage, launching and growing your membership and tackling any challenges with the support of peers in a safe space that's affordable and enjoyable. Got tons of awesome things happening inside the Find Calm Here community. Newly, the Calm Guides. I am going to be having a workshop coming up in November for the Calm Guide to Tech Integration. And so I'm super excited to share that. So I'll be looking forward to connecting with Find Calm Here members about that. If you're interested in the Find Calm Here community, please reach out to me and let me know. There is a free 3-month trial to join if you are interested. I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Paul Bradley. He has over 10 years of experience in the community industry and has led community teams for the last 5 years. Paul is currently the head of global community for Agora Pulse, a social media management tool to help organizations save time and easily manage posts, reporting, monitoring, and team collaboration. A community leading expert and consultant with a background in the tech industry, working for companies such as HireLogic and ADP. In his current role, he's creating a comprehensive education, recognition, and collaboration destination. I love that word, destination, and management team for professionals with social media responsibilities. Welcome, Paul, to the Find Calm Here podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. So lovely to see you again. Glad that we've connected over the last few months. And tell us a little bit about what you do and what your background is in community.
Oh, gosh. Okay. You know, I got into community. I guess you could argue that while I was working for myself from 2010 to 12 in sort of a haphazard consultancy, that I was involved in community in some capacity. We were doing Twitter growth hacking and ended up working for some clients who wanted us to do things like sell barbecue sauce on Twitter and things like that. Or they wanted us to sell barbecue sauce and we decided to use Twitter to do it, which was inventive, I guess you could say. Ultimately, I was headhunted for a community position at Intel. And I think at the time, there weren't people with community backgrounds, particularly in Arizona, where I was then, where I'm from. And so they looked for people with social media background. And they found me and found what I'd been doing. And they said, hey, do you want to be a community manager? And I said, is that like managing an apartment complex or something like that? Because you know what? I'll think about it because I'm working for myself. And if I get free rent, then that's my overhead. So that's good. That reduces my overhead monthly. And I said, no, it's something else. Why don't you come interview for that? And so I did that. And it was a contracting job, which meant I came in for one interview and they said, can you start Monday? And after having so much trouble working for myself for 2 years, getting people to actually pay me for the services rendered and pay me in a timely way, I was so happy at the prospect to get a paycheck. So I started at Intel and, you know, I wasn't sure that it was going to be a moment that changed my career as much as it has, or at least started a new career for me. But as I dug into just what my responsibilities were, I just sort of fell in love and I got really into gaming and gamification. I try not to say gamification too much because it's such an annoying word, but I spent a lot of time kind of boot camping myself during that time at Intel on just what it meant to be a community manager. And there weren't a ton of resources in 2012. This is with 2012. But I basically just followed Jono Bacon and looked into his resources. And at the time, it was really aspirational for me to have a team like he had at Ubuntu at the time. And so much so that when I was interviewing a year later at ADP, I told my mentor and boss, Laura Lerner, that my goal in 5 years, I think when she asked me as I was interviewing, was to have a team of like 5 or 6 community managers. And we did a lot at ADP. I was there for 4 years. We started a support community that achieved a ton of ROI, learned a ton about how to demonstrate ROI for support communities, had a lot of successes, replicated those communities over and over in international markets, and really just had a lot of fun with it. And you know, given where my community expertise was at the time, really I overcompensated with having fun, just because I'd come from social and everything like that, and the technical elements sort of took over my job by the end, and more people were kind of facing forward. But it was really a fun and exciting time. And I went from being kind of a baby community manager to a real kind of like team leader, transitioned on to a couple stops. I was at MicroStrategy for a hot minute and then went to HireLogic, where right on the 5th anniversary of when I had told Laura I wanted to be managing a team of a handful of community managers, because that seems so insane to me, the idea that you could just be more than one community manager, that you might have 5 or 6 at doing specified varied things. I got there, you know, when I started the HireLogic team, you know, I had deadline people and other people report to me, but I hadn't had a full-on major team. And what we got to do at HireLogic, working with big-time client, Fortune 50 client, you know, kind of functioning as that strategic hive mind for a community effort of, you know, hundreds of thousands of members and everything like that, was really fun. And you know, I think that if anybody wants to get into sort of like an accelerated growth of your community management career, work on a strategic services team. You know, it's so cool to be, as your profession and vocation, in a room with 8, 9, 10 community managers who are all doing that for a living and all have different use cases in their background. You're hiring people in from different use cases all the time. And, you know, a lot of these companies like Khoros and HireLogic have these strategic services teams now that are like that. And it's really an awesome way for people to kind of move on. I've seen people go from that team that we were on to all kinds of awesome places. And it's really been heartening. It's really been exciting to see people like just totally launch community management careers into new and exciting directions. I'm off topic. We were talking about my path. This year, I took a gig at AgoraPulse. I got really excited in the interview process by the notion of what they wanted to do with community. And we're kind of keeping it close to the vest for now. But I can say that it's an education and collaboration community. I think we have kind of a new and interesting differentiator that we're going to blast out there here as we launch over the course of the next 6 to 7 months. You know, I hope that we launch actually much sooner, but you know, launches are a varied thing. You launch with an MVP or an MVC, as Erica Cool would call it, and you go forward with things, you know, and you release features and stuff. So we're getting there, and we're building a team. We have like a really cool hire about to come on. And so that's me.
That's so awesome. There's so much there, lots of things there to chat about. I wanted to dig in because a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast might not be familiar with what actually a community manager does or what their role is. And I don't know if there's like an official description, but I was wondering if you could give whatever you would say if somebody asks what a community manager is.
Yeah, I mean, a community manager is somebody who thinks about everyone's point of view and how to create programs to satisfy as many motivations as possible, right? So as opposed to taking a hard line on something and saying, we're going to do things this way, you're thinking about, okay, where is everybody in my audience coming from? And how do I create a suite of engagement-based campaigns and services to get prongs into as many of them as possible? So nothing is going to work for everyone, right? So you try varied things that will bring people in, mastermind groups, user groups. You know, I hear the term mastermind group all the time now. Call it user groups for years in community. You know, like blogs, conversations, AMAs, learning. You know, you just throw a lot of different things at the wall. And that's really kind of the fun of it is a community manager is somebody who throws everything but the kitchen sink at their problem. And maybe other community managers don't see it that way. There are a lot of people who take it in a lot more literal, like point A to point B version of community management. And I think that there's something to that. But my thought process as kind of a creative person has always been, you know, just throw as many, you know, proposed solutions as you can come up with at something and see what happens. And a lot of the time that's the fun with it. So that's a long-winded answer. A community manager to me is an experimenter and an empath who loves people and respects everyone's point of view, not only respects it, but also wants to craft solutions for those points of view.
Yeah. And specifically when we're talking about community managers and how you're describing them is really a position in a larger organization who is tasked with connecting either customers, I would say a customer base. Is that the main focus, I would say?
Yeah. So I went in a completely different, like ethereal, like existential.
Deep dive into community, yeah. But I want to bring it back a little bit just so that everybody's on the same page with us.
So like, just take it back to my first couple jobs with support communities at Intel and ADP. Intel or ADP, or let's just take it to ADP. ADP, its employee base is some huge percentage of its 60 or 70,000 employees are support people. It's like tens of thousands of people. Everybody's aware of the notion that companies don't want you to call them, right? Who hasn't complained that you can't find somebody's phone number? ADP's business is predicated on people calling in and getting support on the phones. And in 2012, Laura Lerner, when she started the communities program, said, hey, I have a different idea. What if we could get people to call in less? The higher-ups were listening at that stage. And we do it with an online collaboration venue. So a company like that would choose to do it to deflect calls. And so the community manager comes in and your job is to get people engaged so that they don't call support. Now, as a community manager, that's not typically how you think of it, right? You think of it as, I want to help people get through their day and I want to help people solve problems. I want to help them network and get, you know, in touch with one another. But at the end of the day, when you're making your presentation to your boss so she can take it to the executive bosses or whatever, they're going to talk about ROI, which in that case is, you know, call deflection. So that's a reason for a community manager. And so that point of view would be then, okay, I'm here to make sure that people achieve solutions here. And that's really the direct outcome. And so, you know, we could even dig into like equations for determining ROI in a support community, all based on how many people viewed a solution, right? Then a community manager might also be something skewed a little bit more towards marketing. There are often corporate communities that function as marketing funnels or brochures, so people can have conversations around product information. A really big software company might have, you know, hundreds of product offerings that's developed over like 50 years. So they would have a ton of things in their community just explaining what those were. And then people interact and engage with that. And then they're kind of signing off on the notion that, okay, they've put themselves into the marketing funnel. Or a community could be basically meant to educate people. In the case of our community, we're looking to educate people, not about a product, but just about like something in general, like a field in general. So a community manager could have any number of different reasons for doing what they do. But at the end of the day, they still just want people to engage, talk about what works for them, talk about how to achieve solutions more effectively. It's really just a solutions broker, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like forums are the best kind of quick answer that I would say if people think about a support forum. So if I'm like having a problem with my MacBook Pro and I'm like, there's some error and Apple says, you know, I go to Apple and I can't find it anywhere, but I type in Google, you know, my problem, there will probably be a forum that comes up. And then sometimes, for example, there's communities with people that are answering the questions that might not even work for Apple, right? They, other people like providing solutions. That's another type of support community. I feel like that's actually community-led, right? I guess that would be description.
Yeah. So like one of the things, and you kind of tap into something that I use all the time, which is over the course of the last 10 years, anytime I tell people I'm a community manager, they say, what's that? And it's not really that easy to answer, as we've just spent 10 minutes going over here. But one of the things I use for people who kind of, I know aren't versed in the technology world or this kind of thing is, all right, so if you're in your car and for whatever reason, it's like it's not starting, like it's seizing up or something, but you can tell that it's not, you know, the ignition or whatever. And this actually used to happen to me all the time. That's why I bring it up. Like your steering wheel's locked or something and you don't remember how to unlock it. What would be the first thing that you do? You just Google 2014 Nissan Maxima steering wheel locked, and you end up on a site and there's people. Someone has said, my steering wheel locked. What do I do? And people said, okay, you do this, that, and the other. And those answers are from 5 years ago. And you say, okay, that's what I need to do. And you do it and it works and you go to work, right? Those are the kind of solutions, and that makes sense to everybody because everybody, for the most part, at least, you know, of certain demographic, of most demographics, achieve solutions through Google at this stage. And it's also important to think about that user there that never, ever goes back to that community or engages with it or logs in, because that's somebody who's achieved a solution that you may never, ever get credit for as a community manager, which is still fine because, you know, we can't get credit for everything. But it also speaks to what every single community effort needs to be aimed at, which is solving day-to-day problems for people. You can have all kinds of cool, you know, conversations and cool people come in. And this is actually echoing a tweet I just sent the other day. And I don't send a lot of tweets, but it was just a moment I felt like I needed to say something. You can have a lot of cool conversations. You can have cool people come in and do AMAs and whatnot. But that doesn't get someone to work in the morning, right? Like, that solution with my car seizing up on my Nissan Maxima, that got me to work. And I know where to go. I bookmark that for next time. And, you know, the next time I need something with my car, that's where I'm going to go. And so a lot of the time, I think people open up a community, start up a forum, something like that, and they kind of just expect people to come because they told them about it. But if people come and they look at it and they think, oh, there's cool theoretical conversations about the field I work in going on. All right, like I'll try to remember to come back. And then someone mentions it to them a year later and they're like, I totally forgot because I never went back because theoretical conversations don't get me paid. You know, what gets you paid is solving problems at work, achieving like anything that helps you achieve more in your life, getting a better job, getting a better position, investing in something, knowing how to run do a side hustle, things like that. You know, a community manager has to be focused on, all right, how do I get X group of people through today? And I don't know. I don't even know if that was prompted how I got there. So I just sort of rambling towards that.
I think you made some really great points, but the biggest thing that you mentioned was about the why of why. And for what we do in FindCom here and what I do with clients is typically I help people. I built my first community on the Mighty Networks platform, and I'm familiar with that platform very well. And, you know, I work with people who are also building a community on the Mighty Networks, and they have struggles around, like, how do I do this? And what, you know, and that's how I became a consultant a year ago, officially a year ago. I've been in business for a year now. And it's a challenge. Congrats. Thank you. It's a challenge because I think people, entrepreneurs are new. I mean, community in general is a newer concept, right? These tech companies that you've mentioned and some of these larger organizations have been doing this for a long time, and they've been establishing different procedures and protocols and all of these things. And so now you have like not just one community manager, but teams of community managers and organizations, which is really awesome, like you said. But still, I work with, and most people I'm assuming are listening to this podcast are actually people that are a one person team. They're not just, they don't have a marketing team. They don't have an advertising team. They don't have a support team. They are the person. And I found that it's super interesting to find all of these structures and things that have been created by the larger organizations and community management and CMX and all these larger organizations. There's ways to customize those frameworks and structures to be able to support these entrepreneurs in different ways. But the biggest thing that you just said that kind of I wanted to point back to was the why, because a lot of people see a benefit in, oh, I could have a membership model and that could give me some reoccurring revenue, right? But they don't necessarily know well, what is that going to be and what does that mean and why would people come? And there's this whole build it and they will come kind of thing. And that just doesn't, we've learned and it doesn't work. And that's because you have to be solving that immediate problem. If you're helping me get to work, that's an important thing that I need a solution. So if I know that I can go to your community and do that, then that's great, or whatever the solution is. And I think that's so valuable to really hone in on what problem. The biggest challenge I see community hosts have right now is they don't know what problem they solve or how they uniquely solve it. And that goes back to like business structure of like how you create your value proposition and what differentiates you against a different from other people. But in regards to community management, I think it's a fascinating conversation to have around what, when you're talking about a community manager, as far as implementation, they want to have some kind of structure, vision, like the community, creator of this space has to have some kind of a vision. And then the community manager kind of implements that vision. That's kind of how I see it. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the creator and the community manager could be one and the same. You know, it depends. And particularly if you're trying to achieve something specific to your business. But yeah, I mean, a community manager could be a mercenary, somebody who can just come in and solve problems for you regardless of what they are. Or oftentimes it can be somebody who is an expert in that field. Hiring for like developer communities, you know, so often they'll be like, if you're not a developer, we don't want you to manage our communities. They just have nuanced things that, you know, if you're not part of that tribe, then, you know, it's not something that they're interested in. So, yeah, I mean, I think the line between the vision and the community manager, it can be one and the same, but for sure it's something that you have to get aligned either way.
Right. To align that business, the business goals or, whatever the, what is that key objectives or what's that term I'm trying to,
the OKRs.
Yeah. What is that called?
Objectives and
Thank
key
you.
Results. I'm new with it. I just started with it. I've seen people on Twitter like complaining about it for years, like high level community people at places like Reddit. And I didn't know what they were personally until recently. At Agoraplus, we use it OKRs, and it's like it's the Google model for tracking people's, you know, progression and achievements and whatnot. And I've been working on them myself for our
team.
Yeah,
very cool. I think it's interesting too, just how community managers have so many different tasks that, and as a community, like, yeah. I know you and I talked before about how your background, experience comes into community management in so many different ways. And it kind of, a lot of times merges really well together. Have you found like something in your background really helped you in your roles as community manager when you were doing that?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the dragon that I was always chasing early as a community manager was content. And my background was communications and writing, and I got an English degree and all that. And I'm relatively verbose, as we've evidenced here. I just was able to, anytime we needed content, churn it out and sort of do that. I remember we had this Around the Bridge in 80 Days thing that I did in the summer of 2014, I think. And the idea was there was new content every day for every business day of the summer, 80 business days. And so bookended the summer maybe. And I ended up writing like 60% of it, 70% of it. At first I was like, okay, I'm going to get all these people to come in on it. And of course people agree to it and everything. And then when it comes time to it, they couldn't do it. And so the editorial calendar became me. And so it was something that I used kind of as a stopgap as I figured out in later years how to actually motivate people to create content or create backup plans for when they won't and everything like that. But writing definitely helped me out. I think just being overtly social. I'm kind of an introvert, extrovert personality type. So I, in my downtime, will kind of just like go within, right? But as when I'm on, I'm on. And my ability to kind of be gregarious and connect people and whatnot was helpful. I created sort of a persona in my first major community at ADP of just being goofy all the time. So I was just writing goofy blogs. You know, we created like just silly collaboration areas for people to like share recipes and talk about goofy stuff and everything like that. And was able to create kind of a core loyal group of people in that community at the beginning. And the sad part about that is when you have success and scale out to 125,000 people, like we did there, that core of 200 people who are sharing recipes and sharing jokes, you like stop being able to have time for them. Like it's, you achieve success and you stop being able to have time for what's fun. But I was able, I think, as a community manager to smoke and mirror a lot as I figured things out with just writing a bit, with writing and just trying to be funny.
I love the content piece because I think that's a big challenge for me and for a lot of people that are launching a new community. They feel like they've got to have all this content and they want to have users create content, but they don't necessarily, they try to maybe create posts or put some questions out there or reach out to people, but they struggle. So I was wondering if you could share a tip on how to get people to create content.
Well, there's got to be something in it for them, right? You know, quid pro quo is a big part of the community game. And a lot of us who've been in it for a little while ended up learning that just because we didn't have budgets. You know, it wasn't like we wanted to do things to try to get people to do things for no money. We just had to. And so when you talk about throwing the kitchen sink at everything, that's what you did just to see what mattered to people. And so you're constantly doing that math, right? Like, you know, as I try this, does this seem to matter to people? Does this level of exposure matter to people? Do people develop a sense of accountability? Do they self-generate a sense of accountability? And if so, if I identify somebody who self-generates accountability, like somebody who's going in every single day to try to solve people's problems at 4 o'clock, and you notice that they're always going in there right then, you've not compelled them to do that. How can you harness that? Because it means something to them to get that exposure, to be seen as an expert in that way. So keeping an eye out for that kind of behavior. But also, you know, if you're going, like, there has to be something in it for the person, right? And so that kind of goes back. It's a different way of saying what I already said. You have to be willing to provide something. And so like, I think back to my days as a sole proprietor, you know, working in consulting, doing growth hacking and community stuff. You know, that was like the recession in Arizona lasted like a couple extra years, I feel like. And a lot of small business owners were doing bartering in those days. And so it was like, I would grow someone's Twitter in exchange for an advertisement somewhere or whatever. I think that kind of process helped me think about what it meant to get people to contribute for me. If I'm going to do that, what can I do for this person? And so there's not any like direct solution. It's you can always do something for someone that they appreciate. And it doesn't have to involve money. It can involve exposure. It can involve, you know, some kind of introduction. Like there's people that you know that could help that person. There's networks, there's things, there's advice. And so it's just always thinking about, okay, this person, I want them to do something. Why would they do it? What would make them do it? And maybe even just asking them, hey, I'd love for you to write a guest blog for me. What would get you to do that? And they might say, I don't know. I don't have any time, blah, 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 this and that. It's like, okay, well, you know, do you have access to various pieces of software? Like, what do you have at your disposal? Like, do you have licenses that you can give people? Just think about it, throw the kitchen sink at it and think about what you can give someone to create that sort of shared trust and accountability so that you two have a symbiotic relationship going forward, and then just replicate that over and over.
Yeah, the fascinating thing about community is that it's, we want to help people, but then we don't know how to help them unless we ask them. And that's how I actually met you, was through discovery, because you and I worked together to do some discovery interviews for your project. And, you know, it's fascinating on what we learned, right? We learned so much about what people mm-hmm. want in a community, right? But I feel like that's the missing component that a lot of people don't do in the beginning, is the discovery part, they put things up because they say, okay, I think this is what I want to do. Here's what I'm going to offer. And they don't really think about, well, what am I giving them besides this specific content? Have they asked for that content? If I gave it to them, have they asked for it already? So like, I know it's going to be consumed. And then, yeah, how could I get them to participate and what's in it for them? And I think a lot of people also miss out on that and think there's still a lot of trading happening. I do a lot of trading still with other entrepreneurs to this day. I have a lot of people that I know that do that or say, hey, I'll write a guest blog for you if, you know, you could promote my website. And I just did a collaboration call with one of the community members, Carol, who has her community. And we did a live video where we did demos of each of our communities and talked about what we do inside. And so those kinds of collaborative, partnerships are, to me, what helps entrepreneurs bridge the gap, you know, when they're starting a community like this is like, okay, well, you might not have all of those resources in the beginning. So how can you get them? And that's, I feel like collaboration is a big part of that in community.
Yeah, you need to hack it together at the beginning. And the easiest way to do that is with discovery. If you can get people to talk to you, that's great. Like what we did, absolutely. Deb, you were instrumental in helping craft the cadence and the questions that we used in our discovery process, which was hugely successful and taught me so much. And, you know, I think that anybody can do that. You can reach out to enough people to get, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 to actually respond and meet with you. And then they'll tell you what they need. And if you start to create what they need, they'll start to engage. And then once they're engaging, they'll be telling you what they need constantly, just with their engagement. So, but you're right, though, as with even just the understanding or adoption of community culturally, like within an organization, that first hump to get over is the hardest and things are downhill from there. But it can be daunting. And I think a lot of people start a lot of communities thinking, okay, particularly if they're going to charge money for it, I'm going to get people in. Even, you know, like I know that you're heavily involved in CMX. I think the CMX Pro community took years because it costs money to go into to get a ton of engagement. And that's not knocking it. I'm just saying, like, it's when you're charging people for a community, like the value proposition has to be even more in your face. And you've got to be super upfront with it.
Well, and I think to your point about, engagement, people are showing up when they need to, where they need to, when they're getting benefits and something out of it. So, I'm in a lot of communities. Am I active in all of them? Absolutely not. I'm active in a very few ones that I get something out of, ones that are relevant to whatever I'm doing, or it's something I'm interested in, you know, interest communities also, like, you know, photography, for one example, and, you know, hiking groups. I lead a hiking community on a Facebook group that has randomly grown to 200 and something people. And it was a group that I put together for my friends so that we could go on hikes together. And now I've got random people like asking to join all the time and posting their hike. And it's really crazy how, like, sometimes, like, I'm a community builder and it's so funny because I was like, didn't even try with that. Like, I do nothing and people show up. And then, you know, and then other places I'm like, please come. It's funny.
Well, that's the challenge, right? It's determining what rings the bell for people. And like, so in the use case that you bring up there, and I need to stop using the word use case in my day-to-day life. Like it's, I think I say this when I'm talking about buying groceries, become corporate robot, ties, corpo humanoid, to quote community. In that use case, you've got people who love hiking. They need hiking, right? Like hiking is in their soul. It's hiking is what you do that gets you through the day, is thinking about the next hike. And so you naturally sort of created a community because that it has that fire for you, right? And so that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, the visionary and the community manager. Sometimes when you've just got that fire for it, you're just naturally going to find the people who also have that fire. And what gets them through the day? Finding an awesome hike, you know, and you're talking about an awesome hike and that person can get there this Saturday. Well, that's, they're going to come back and they're going to share because you had a shared experience because you said something would be awesome. And guess what? It was awesome. Confirmed. And now everybody else is like, damn, I got to go do that one. Right. It's the same idea. It's the challenge of the community manager. You talked about, I go to communities that I get value out of. The challenge of the community manager is to provide you as much value as possible all the time. So you might think, I go there once a month because I get value if I go there once a month. There's enough there for me to get the value. So that community manager's challenge is, well, I got to up that to 4 times a month for Deb. And I got to up it to 6 times a month for Susan. You know, and these are all just personas of people. And that's what you're thinking about is, you know, I got to have ways to increase. And that's the data that you're running all the time, right? And there's so much. There's so much people can do with data now. Like the data team at AgoraPulse is amazing. The data team that we worked with at HireLogic was amazing. They can tell you that stuff. You know, we had a smart AI newsletter that we sent out at HireLogic where even a user who hadn't been logged in, they could tell you like what content they were interacting with. And then the algorithm could then in the next newsletter that went out, serve them stuff based on what they were looking at before, even when they weren't logged in. You know, so I don't know. I think I'm off track now, but like I just got into data stuff.
Analytics are really cool. Mighty Networks has some really great analytics. They just upped their analytics game with some new functionality this year. And I think, you know, it can be very overwhelming to a Mighty Network host, but it's nice to look at some things like content, for example. You can see what's content is being consumed or not consumed, what polls or questions or members are in there and active versus inactive members. And it can help you guide the content. Like as a content creator and a community manager who might be in charge of creating a content calendar, they can identify, okay, here's the review from the last 3 months, the last 90 days, and what's the next 90 days going to look like? And then you can start to plan out your calendar according to like, this is what's been really working. We're going to try some new stuff. We're going to use the stuff that's been working. We're going to, you know, maybe increase that or improve that in some way. And then maybe try something new and then see if that's interesting or not. And that's a lot of what, you know, I'm doing in a community that I'm a community manager. I'm a community transition manager currently, but I'm going to be transitioning to a community manager for this community. And it's just been interesting to learn about these people. There's about 7,000 people in that community, but most of them are inactive. Like there's barely anybody in there talking except for the people that are in like other additional programs. Like they're in paid areas of this space, of this community. And so I wanted to ask you your thoughts on, you know, somebody starting up a community and what does that look like? Because I know you're, you know, you haven't even launched yet and you guys are looking at building out a larger network, but you're starting, I think, with a beta group. I think what you talked about starting with a beta group, but I was wondering what your thoughts were on like starting and then looking at like the first, you know, 3 to 6 months and what's the journey there that you've experienced or that you hope to experience with the project you're working on now?
Well, I mean, you first of all just touched on one of the core components of it, which is establishing your editorial calendar, right? You just went through all the steps of having an editorial calendar, which is a huge, huge piece of it. And knowing what's going to be on your editorial calendar for 3 to 6 months, huge. Like you got to get out in front of it. You can't end up like me in 2014 in 80 days around the bridge, around the bridge in 80 days, where I was up at 1 in the morning writing blogs because we couldn't get people to do it. Right. Like you've got to be better prepared than that. You know, I think that first of all, yes, having good content at the beginning, the content is incumbent on you. 90% of it is going to come from you. And then that percentage will drill down as time goes on if you're successful. But, you know, when you're starting out, you've just got to have a lot of content, a lot of stuff that would interest people. Put it on a cadence. Make sure that if you have a series of here's like tips on how to do this in your industry or whatever, make that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or, you know, come up with a cadence that's reasonable for you to accomplish and achieve. I think having a beta group, having a soft launch is really good. Getting people in there who you can trust, getting them toying with things, QAing things. Looking at, you know, what works and what doesn't, always be getting feedback from people, always be improving. And then, you know, don't be afraid to launch, you know, don't be afraid to open up and just let people in and see what happens. You know, I think in the case of a major corporate community, you want there, you want 75% of your value to be there on day one. And then you want to incrementally over the course of your first year, you know, release 5% this, 5% that, 5% that. And so that people are getting an idea that, oh, this is building to a crescendo. But it still needs to be 75% awesome at the beginning. If you're releasing something, you know, for your individual business or whatever, as long as you're providing the value at the beginning, you don't know necessarily where it's going to go. You know where you want it to go. But, you know, if you're taking the initiative to actually just have content, I think that you shouldn't be afraid to launch and just get people, invite people in and see what they do. And, you know, in the case of certain things, like, you know, I'm a big proponent of personally, and this isn't hopefully going to be totally unpopular, I'm a big proponent of never charging for anything in community. But if you're going to, or you think that ultimately you want to have a model that's paid. And I think a lot of people are amenable to that model. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about it recently where they are much more amenable to it than they were maybe 10 years ago. Launch without that, you know, start off, build something and create the value so that people then are saying, you know what, to retain this, I want to pay money. I honestly think that that's what, and I know that like Facebook had always pushed back on this, that they would never do it. But I just thought once Facebook got us hooked in 2005, 6, 7, they should have just said, this is now $5 a year. And maybe we'd have never seen an ad and maybe we've never seen misinformation. I'm not saying I'm solving the world of misinformation here. But just like that WhatsApp model, if you remember WhatsApp before Facebook bought them, the deal was you signed up and it cost $1 a year and it went on your cell phone bill and the first year was free. So the idea was you signed up and I'm going to pay $1 a year from now. Sure. I'm on board with that. And then it had like 2 billion users or something. And that might've been later or whatever, but the idea was going to be $2 billion a year. Get people hooked, then start charging them, you know, get your audience, get your engagement. And then, you know, you could even talk to people, hey, listen, you know, I need to make money off this. You understand that I've got to make a living. And this is a revenue stream I've been looking to develop. And this has kind of been a beta for that. You can be upfront with that too. This is a beta for me to develop a revenue stream. And if people really feel the value, they'll tell you, you know what, I would come back. I would do this for $7 a month. You put out polls, say, would you pay $3 a month? Would you pay $5? Would you pay $7? And go from there.
Yeah. You know? I think there's a couple things I wanted to point out. There's different methodologies of community, right? For different reasons, because specifically talking about businesses, like corporations or large organizations have hopefully if they're starting a community, have the funding or some kind of budget to support somebody, to pay somebody to do this role, to start the community, to launch it, to do all the stuff. That model therein, then you're getting compensated as a community manager. And then it's not so much about how am I recovering my costs. It's more about now I need to show why this is an important thing that my company needs to keep investing in, right? So that's the one path. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who's been in business as an entrepreneur or a small business that's been in business for about 10 or 20 or 30 years or something like that. And later down the road, they're like, oh, we learned about this thing called community and we want to connect. We want to have a support community for our products and services or something like that. It makes sense for them to have a free community because they're serving their clients in a better way. Like you talked with your example about like having somewhere that they don't have to contact the company and they can resolve their solution without even talking to anybody, maybe on the phone or something like that. And that's like a support dedicated community. But then there's these entrepreneurs that are new to community industry, which there's a lot of people out there promoting this whole sales funnel and, you know, getting people into the funnel and getting them into that paid membership model. And that, to me, is combining tech and what tech has been doing with this new entrepreneurial model of membership. And so in the middle of there, you have people and you have community. And then you're like, well, how do I get people in my community? And how do I make this affordable? And how do I charge for it? Because I need to make some money because I'm spending as an entrepreneur, I'm spending so much time, or I'm hiring an assistant or a community manager to run this space. And so therefore, it has to be some kind of profitable. And so what am I then offering in there? And so I feel like those are different segmented customers that might consider, like, somebody who's listening would be like, oh, I identify as like a larger corporation, I'm a member of that organization, or I'm a small business and I would want to have a support community, or I'm an entrepreneur. And so in the entrepreneurial area, when I talk with clients, I also, there's, when you're talking about people who've been in business for, you know, 10 or 15 years, they have content, they probably have blogs, they probably have lots of like things that they can repurpose and put together, they can probably hire, you know, a marketing professional or somebody to go and put all this content together, and they have it. But not everybody does have content. And not everybody has, you know, any concept of, okay, what is this really going to be? And so the other thing you mentioned, and what I recommend to people who are in the bucket of, I don't necessarily have a lot of content in the beginning, and I feel like overwhelmed, how do I help them find calm, is saying, you don't really need a lot of content. And you know why? Because you start with a beta group. You ask five of these people that you think are your ideal members. You talk to them. You do discovery. You figure out, what is the problem I'm solving? Who am I solving it for? Why are they going to come and be a part of this? And then decide, is this something I'm going to charge for? How is this going to work? Is the value there? And what I did over the last year was I ran three beta groups. I had a mastermind last year, and then I had a mastermind. I had two masterminds in the beginning of 2021. And I learned from that experience. I did it for free. I asked a couple people to join me. We had weekly meetings and they had homework and we had templates. And so now after that, I had an exit interview with them. I learned what was helpful for them and what they needed and what wasn't helpful. So now I just launched the Mighty Masterminds this week, officially in October, and have paid members that are excited to work with me for 90 days in a mastermind group. And it is great. And it's super exciting, but it's like, I had no idea. And I think this is the point that I'm trying to ring the bell about a little bit, is I had no idea how long and how much effort that was going to take to prove the value for other people to want to give me their hard-earned money. And I think that's a lot of what people misconception around this whole sales funnel thing and entrepreneurs getting into this funnel and getting them, you know, in there in that capacity, is then you're taking the human out of the component and you're talking about community. So I feel like it just depends on, again, which segment you're in and what the purpose is. And it all goes back to the vision of the community and what the purpose is and how it aligns with the business or the values. If it's a self-interest community versus a support community versus a transformation of where I'm like, maybe I am in a community because I need to lose weight or get healthy somehow, or I'm actually working with a client on a community around personal development. And, you know, there's a lot of spaces out there for community to be a part of, as a member, to be a part of communities and to lead community. So I think it's just, yeah, that was a lot. Sorry.
No. So, I mean, what you touched on there was just that you earned trust. And so the job is to earn trust, and that's it. And regardless of what your community is doing, whether it's a huge corporate thing or if it's trying to, you know, get people in small groups to pay you a subscription fee, it's all about earning trust. You know, one of the things that we found in the discovery that you and I both worked on was people talked about, I don't know what information I can trust in the social media field. I read it. That doesn't mean I can trust it, right? And so if you're sitting there telling me, you know, you should pay me $9 a month, I don't know if I should trust that I should pay you $9 a month. You went out there and you actually gave people the reason, like you gave them value. And they said, you know, this is worth it to me. I'm going to pay. And I'm not saying it's $9 a month, whatever it is a month. But that's what it is. It's earning trust. And one thing you said is, I think you mentioned self-interest communities. All communities are self-interest communities. All those things that you talked about, you know, losing weight, you know, financial literacy. Everything is self-interest. And that kind of goes back to what I was talking about before, which is how you're going to get somebody through their day. People are self-interested. That's not in a negative way. People are trying to get through the day. They're trying to pay their rent. They're trying to get a better job. They're trying to do something more for themselves. They're trying to make things better for their family. And if your community is focused on that, is focused on the kind of things that help people make more money next week, get a better job, you know, get upskill themselves so that they're more valuable, give them exposure so they can book more clients. You know, that's the kind of stuff that really moves the needle for people. And builds and trust. It's just earning.
You got to get the know, like, and trust factor. It's the basic foundations of business, right? You got to have those know, like, and trust factor people. And it took me a year, and now I'm finally really seeing the results of the hard work that I've been doing to build that. And I think sometimes we think it's going to take. It's going to happen a lot faster. It takes a lot longer than we maybe think it's going to take.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Just tell everybody if there's any last minute thoughts you had, or just where anybody can learn more about you if they are interested in connecting with you in regards to tech and community.
Sure. Yeah. If you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. It's just Paul Bradley. I think you would find me normally. I think it's Paul.
I'll have the link in the show notes.
Paul M. Bradley. There you go. I'm on Twitter too. And they put that in the show notes, I think probably as well. You can always just like reach out to me. I love to talk about community and ramble and whatnot. In terms of what we're doing at AgoraPulse, stay tuned. You know, if you're in the social media management field, first of all, I'd love it if you reached out to me. If you had any questions about what we're trying to do, we really are invested in the notion of we're investing in the industry of social media management, and we want people to develop in that field as best that they can. We want more people to develop into that field. We want to help people at earlier stages, you know, whether they're in college taking digital marketing classes, learn more, you know, get access to tools like ours and others. And expertise, you know, experts, you know, we're working to bring people together from, you know, the biggest industry influencers down to somebody who is just aspirational or maybe looking for a career pivot. You know, they're homebound and they want to become a social media manager as a sole proprietor. They want to work for a major brand. You know, we're really trying to touch a soup to nuts like venue goal. And be that place where people can go and get their information, do some learning, earn some certifications, try to find some connections and work that will help them grow and you know, be better. We're going to try to earn that trust.
I love it. I'm excited. I'm so excited. That sounds like a really amazing space. And I can't wait to learn more about what you're doing there. And thank you so much for taking the time with us today. If for anybody who's listening to the FindCom Here podcast, make sure to subscribe. We have episodes. So officially October, we started doing every other week. That's for me to find calm. So because I've picked up with my clients, client work has been growing, and which is amazing and great, like I said.
Yes.
Nice. But you know, somebody had said, Deb, I can't keep up with your podcast and I'm not finding calm. And I thought, well, that's not really great. and then I'm realizing how challenging it can be to schedule podcast guests and get the content together and write the intros and upload the photos. And I do have thankfully a lovely podcast editor, but it's just been just a massive shift that I've just made of just saying, you know what, it's okay. I'm going to go to every other week and that's going to be great. So I'm really excited about that shift, we just announced that today on social media. I just put a post up there about that, as well as our 1 year of podcasting at FindCom Here. So it's just been an amazing time. So thanks everybody for your support. Please, if you have the opportunity to put a review or a recommendation or share the podcast with somebody that you think might like it, that would be fantastic. Upcoming, there's a lot of great podcast interviews coming up. I'm actually starting to integrate working with Circle. I know I had two people from the past podcast episodes on that have Circles. And so I'm looking at doing some collaboration with Circle in the future. So you'll probably hear some more podcasts about that. And until the next time, I hope you're finding calm in this day, evening, morning, afternoon, wherever it is, whenever it is for you. I hope you're finding calm. Until the next time, take care and talk to you soon. Bye.